Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Making Hestery. My name is Brian.
And I'm Katie.
And we're the Hesses. And today, while we're recording, is Ash Wednesday.
It is.
Which is newish for us.
Right. To actually, like, recognize.
Right.
As a
so
important day.
Right. I have washed it off. Yep. But we had, as a church, our first Ash Wednesday service.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, you weren't able to be there.
Yeah. Sickness has hit once again.
Has it hit again, or has it just, like, never stopped? It feels like it's just never stopped.
It kind of feels like it's like a, like it just revs up when it wants to. Like, yeah. It's like, hey, I'm going to just, like, hang out with you guys for the entirety of the winter.
Right.
But every now and then, I'm just going to bring a fever out.
Yeah.
And, like, have junk in your throat.
Yeah.
Constantly.
Yeah.
And then Izzy wakes up with a fever today.
Izzy was sick. So, unfortunately, she was home with me while you were out. And then you guys stayed home.
Yep.
But I don't want to go super in depth into this, but it was like a really amazing service.
Yeah.
Really amazing. Just so there was such like a reverence and like a sweetness in the room.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really, really great.
That's awesome. So. And it is like you said, it's the first time we've done this as a church.
Mm-hmm.
And so like when our senior leader brought it up, I think everybody was kind of like, what?
Yeah.
Like we're not Catholic.
We're not Catholic. So what do you mean?
Why are we doing Ash Wednesday? But I think we had a long dialogue about it as a staff. And I do think that like bringing back some like tradition is actually really beautiful and like just allows you to connect with a part of history that like we wouldn't otherwise, obviously, if we're not celebrating it or recognizing it at all. So I think it's just, there's something really like deep to it.
There is for sure. And yeah, it's just like a good reminder that we're a part of something that's so much bigger than just our little church here in North Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the pendulum that we've mentioned before of parenting. And there are these like two extreme forms of parenting that we see a lot in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
And on one side, it's very like authoritarian.
Yeah.
Very like angry, controlling, intimidating, lots of threats, fear of punishment.
Do what I say, when I say, how I say, or else.
Or else I'm going to get angry. Mm-hmm. It'll be your fault that I'm angry.
Yeah.
So there's that side of things. But then on the far other side, there's this very like permissive form of parenting that we're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
It's very passive.
Yeah.
No discipline. Kids aren't really told no.
Right. The free very range weak kids.
Yes. And I look at both and I think I don't like either of these.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be a part of either of these.
Yeah.
But there are bits from both sides that I think if we can take the good and bring them together in the middle, I think that there is like a really healthy form of parenting that we can find.
Right. Yeah.
In the middle of permissive and authoritarian parenting.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the terms I've heard people using, which I really like, is authoritative.
Yes.
I think authoritative is a really good word to use. It's very different.
Right.
Sounds like authoritarian.
Make sure you don't mix up the two of the words.
They're different. And we've worked really hard so far at finding the balance between those.
Yes.
Because on one hand, like we believe in like the power of being gentle and being kind and being patient.
Yeah.
And that those qualities actually go a really long way as a parent. But there's kind of this like gentle parenting thing that people are talking about.
I've heard it said a few times. Yes.
People talk about gentle parenting and I don't think there's just a definition of that.
Right.
I think it's just kind of a blanket term of like, let's get away from the authoritarian thing.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, yeah, let's get away from that.
Yeah.
But I think for some people, gentle parenting means the permissive parenting.
Mm-hmm.
That's just on the opposite side of the spectrum.
Right.
It's like, well, that's not better.
It's right. Just, that's just a different kind of bad.
both sides will create all kinds of dysfunction.
Yes.
And we want to avoid that.
Mm-hmm.
So we can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, let's do it.
So you and I have like thought about this and we've kind of looked at this. And we also were the type of people that we love observing.
Mm-hmm.
So I love watching other parents.
Oh, yeah. It's so entertaining.
It is entertaining. It's also sure like so helpful.
Oh, too, of course. And people are like, woo.
Everybody's watching everybody and everybody's yeah. judging and everybody oh, yeah. is comparing.
Yep.
But I do love observing how other parents do things because yeah. sometimes you see something and it's like, that was awesome. Mm-hmm. That worked. Sometimes you see a parent and it's like, well, that wasn't great.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
And I don't have the relational equity to tell you that. But right.
Like, hey.
That's not going to do what you think it's going to do right. or hope it's going it's to do.
So not doing anything right now. So
yeah,
definitely not going to produce results right. in the future that you want.
Yeah. But I, you know, as I've been thinking about this, I think that there are, generally speaking, two reasons why people parent the way they parent. And yeah. the second one, okay, I'll give it to you. The second one is, generally speaking, more applicable to Christians, but I'll kind of leave it at that for now.
Okay.
So first, I think people parent the way they parent because of how they were raised.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed that a lot of times people just do what their parents did.
Right. It's like, well, this is how you parent. Mm-hmm. And so why would I even think to try another way? Because mm-hmm. this is how I was raised. Yeah. So this is how I'm going to raise my kids.
Yeah. I turned out okay.
Yeah.
That's what people yeah. love to say. Well, I turned out okay.
Yeah, I'm fine. A few bumps along the road.
Right. Yeah. And the thing is that like, even if you had great parents, doing what your parents did because it's what they did is actually never a good reason to do anything, even sure. if it was good. But that shouldn't be the reason.
Mm.
If you're doing what your parents are doing, it should be because it had a really amazing outcome, that it was effective, that it worked.
Yeah.
But for me, just to say, well, it's just the way my parents did it, mm-hmm. is like, it's just not a good reason.
Right.
Right?
It's kind of a cop out of the yeah. like necessity of thinking about why you're doing what you're doing.
Right.
It's like, yeah, this is how I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Just because I have seen it done this way. So.
And that's usually like my first thought. When I hear somebody say, this is how my parents did things, my first thought is, not even necessarily that your parents must have been good or mm-hmm. not great. My first thought is, oh, you haven't really thought about like parenting, have
right.
you?
Or right. really any of the given, possibilities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so on one hand, people parent the way they do because it's how they were raised. On the other side of that, sometimes people parent the way they do because they are trying to get as far from the way they were raised as possible.
Yes.
And you can find this on both sides of the spectrum. You can find people who were raised in a very authoritarian, controlling household, and they think, I don't want any part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so in an effort to be different and in an effort to do things a little bit better, people often swing to the other side of the pendulum.
Yep.
And the thing about pendulum shifts is you never get it right on your first move.
Mm.
Every time I've ever had like a paradigm shift in my life where like I was thinking one way or I, you know, I believed one thing and I was introduced to something else.
Mm-hmm.
And there are these like opposing schools of thought or opposing ways of doing things. I've never, ever seen anybody make that shift and land in the middle. It's always sure. like one end to the other.
Way
and then eventually we kind of settle into like a mm-hmm. healthy medium.
Right? Yeah.
But oftentimes people will do that and they'll think, okay, I don't like the way my parents raised me. It was super authoritarian. I'm going to swing way over here
mm-hmm.
and I'm just going to be a super nice guy.
Yeah.
Mr. Yes.
No rules.
Yeah.
You just do whatever makes you happy.
Yeah. Like we're all just hanging yeah. out. Yep.
I'm the cool dad.
Right. Yeah. Cool I'm not mom. Like the other dads. I'm a cool dad. And you know, I think you could find cases too where people were raised in a super like permissive,
yeah,
no rules home, and they grow up and they think, well, that wasn't great.
Right. That felt really chaotic.
Yeah. And yeah. so I, as far as I can tell, I think that shift happens less often than I think going from permissive, being raised permissive to authoritarian.
Yeah.
Seems to happen, at least in my experience.
Right.
Less often than growing up in an authoritarian mm-hmm. home and switching.
Right. which I wonder how much of that is because we're coming from more generations of authoritarian parenting.
It's definitely a generational thing.
I feel like maybe in, 10, 20 years, maybe we'll have more stories of people coming out of the gentle parenting or permissive parenting back, swinging over to the more authoritarian side because they're like, this did not work for me. So we're going to go this way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in the middle, so on the authoritarian side, you have parents who punish. And we have a whole episode, maybe a couple episodes, I don't remember, dedicated to the difference between discipline and punishment. If you're listening to this, stop. If you think that punishment and discipline are the same thing, go back.
Yeah.
Go back immediately. Stop.
Spoiler alert.
Hit stop. Go find those episodes because they are not the same thing. Right. And like understanding the difference between the two has probably been like one of the most important things for me personally.
Yeah.
Like as a parent, one of the most important things that I learned is the difference between punishment and discipline.
Yes.
Do I get it right every time? Of course not. But I understand the difference and I have something I'm aiming for. So go listen to that. Even if you've heard it, go listen to it again. But on the authoritarian side of things, you have parents who punish. And they're motivated by fear.
Yep.
They use all the things we've been talking about in the last couple episodes. They're angry. They, they're controlling, intimidating. On the permissive side, there isn't really any form in its like worst expression.
Sure.
There's not really any form of discipline. And I can usually tell when I see, when I like observe kids, I can usually tell what kind of household they grew up in.
Yeah. It's very telling.
It's very telling.
Very, very telling. Like, oh, you've never been told no.
You've never
have
been
you?
Told no. And I think what's hard is that kids who grew up in a punishment paradigm, I think generally speaking, are more well behaved than kids who grew up with no form of discipline. They're more well behaved.
Yeah.
It's a fear-based obedience.
Right.
But generally speaking, they kind of have that fear in them and that they've, they know what happens if they step out of line.
Yeah.
Where kids who aren't disciplined, they're not told no. They kind of just do whatever they want and they're running the house.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Right.
You can tell who those kids are really quickly because they have no regard for authority.
Yeah.
They think they can do whatever they want. They're super entitled.
When you like ask them to do something, they literally just kind of like look at you.
Yeah.
And then turn around and walk away. Yeah. Like,
they're like, okay.
Who do you think you are?
And kids who grew up in that, in like a very permissive home, those kids are running the show. They're the ones making all the decisions.
Yeah.
Like, for example, if you give your kid like an iPad or like a treat or something as a preemptive move against a tantrum that you're predicting would come if you didn't do that thing, that kid knows exactly how to get what they want.
Yep.
They know that tantrums work. If I throw a tantrum, I'll get the iPad. If I throw a tantrum, I'll get the treat or whatever.
Yep.
And they know exactly how to get what they want.
Oh, yeah. And they learn it really young.
Really young.
Like probably before two.
Yeah.
They learn, kids like, so if I start screaming, I'm going to get that toy.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get it fast.
Yep.
So here we go. Buckle up, Mom.
Yep. But again, one of the things that you and I have been finding as we're trying to, like, find the healthy middle between the two, where we believe in being calm, we believe in being kind, but also authoritative.
Right.
So we do discipline. We do believe that our kids need to know that we're in charge.
Yes.
100%.
Yeah.
Like if that's even a question, we're doing something wrong.
Right. Yeah.
And in that, we are finding that our kids are well connected to us. They obey and respond really well.
Yeah.
And they seem to do that out of a, like more out of love and respect than out of fear.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think a lot of parents don't believe when we say that kids will make good choices in an effort to protect the connection with their parents mm-hmm. if that connection is firmly established.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of parents just can't really imagine that connection is something that kids will fight for.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll fight for by making good choices.
Yeah.
By responding well, by yes. listening and obeying.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times I think people just, they only see that like the fear of punishment is the only way to keep kids in line
mm-hmm.
to yeah. get them to comply.
Yeah. And I think we've been taught too, like, I mean, you hear all the time, like how selfish kids are and how like it's all about them. And so I think the, you know, actually believing that there is such a desire for connection from a kid's heart
yeah.
can be hard to believe whenever you've been taught like kids are only motivated by selfishness. They mm-hmm. only like are doing things to get what they want to do, you know, and like, mm-hmm. okay, you can argue that connection is something that they want.
Yes.
But that hopefully is a mutually desired thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're not just, you know, doing something in order to manipulate you into getting what they want.
Yeah.
They are doing something that you want in order to understand and like actually know that, hey, we're connecting. Mom loves me. Dad loves me. This is a safe place.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to show them by doing what they just asked me to do.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
It is. And this is something we've said a long time ago. And I'll say it again for our new listeners, that on the authoritarian side, you have boundaries without freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And that looks like control.
Yeah.
On the permissive side of parenting, you have freedom without boundaries. And that looks like chaos.
Yeah.
So you and I have been working towards understanding the relationship between freedom and boundaries
mm-hmm.
and how to raise kids with the sense of freedom that is like so innately put in all of us.
Yeah.
I mean, every single person has this innate desire to be free
yes.
and to make their own decisions.
Mm-hmm.
How do you let kids do that in the midst of boundaries?
Right.
Because we want both.
Yes.
We want freedom and we want boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And we're kind of just learning that when kids are really young, take Oliver, for example,
mm-hmm.
who just turned 8 months.
Yeah.
He has very little freedom.
Sure. Yeah.
Very little freedom. Lots of boundaries.
Yeah.
So right now he's like scooting all over the house.
Mm-hmm.
He's really interested in the stairs.
Yes.
Thankfully, he's not really gone after the cat food as much as I thought he would.
No, he literally today, they said that he crawled right past it to get to the vacuum.
Which is right behind it on yes. the other side.
Literally, he was yeah. like touching it. If he had like put his hand back, his yeah. hand would have been in the water bowl. But
yeah, anyways. I mean, there's a water bowl, there's a food bowl. I had just assumed that that would be like his whole world is right. trying to get to that thing,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
Thankfully, he hasn't really noticed it.
Mm-mm.
But he has tons of boundaries, very little freedom.
Yeah.
Because like if he's going towards the stairs, I'll get his attention. I'll call his name. I'll get his attention. Be like, hey,
yeah.
like, uh-uh. Like,
right.
that's not going to work.
Yep.
Like, don't go, you know.
Danger.
But we have boundaries to the point that if he goes towards the stairs, I will physically grab him and move him. And
yes.
be like, you're not doing that. Like,
yep.
I'm just not about to watch you fall down the stairs.
No.
And so he's so young.
Mm-hmm.
He's a baby. He needs tons of boundaries.
Yeah.
As they get older, so Isabel just turned 4.
Mm-hmm.
She has more freedom than Ollie does.
Yep.
She has a lot more freedom, but still like lots of boundaries.
Still pretty limited. Yeah.
Yep. And even Nora too, she's 7.
Mm-hmm.
And she's kind of, I feel like we're striking a good balance between giving her freedom to make choices. By the way, if you're new, you haven't listened to the first episode, push pause, go back and listen to the first episode. Because what I'm about to say, I'm not going to explain it in depth, but we have explained it in depth. In the first episode, we really kind of laid a foundation for this. But because kids are born with an innate, not just desire, but like need to mm. be free and
mm-hmm.
to make choices, we're
yeah.
all born that way. Because they have that, we have found that healthy boundaries that are set up around their freedom looks like giving them options and letting mm. them choose between those options.
Yes.
I'm not talking about unlimited options.
No.
Because that's not helpful for anybody.
No.
Kids are overwhelmed. I mean, even like we found that even as something as simple as like laying out 2 or 3 different like like outfit options for them when they're getting dressed is so helpful.
Right.
Because sometimes they'll open up the closet or the drawer and there's like 40 things in there. And it's just overwhelming.
Right.
So sometimes we'll be like,
hey. Their little brains are like, what? Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's like, okay, here's three dresses. Which one of these do you want?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes they pick those options and sometimes that shows them or makes them realize, actually, I want this.
Yes.
Which I think that happens more often than the options that we set out actually are chosen.
And sometimes Nora will be like, hey, mom, like, I've got these two shirts. Which one should I wear? Yeah. And you'd be like, that one. She'd be like, no, I'm going to wear this one.
It's like she literally just needs me like, to tell her one so she can choose the opposite one. I'm like, great. Hey, if it's working for you, we're making a decision. So whatever.
Yeah. And, you know, practically speaking, one of the ways we'll give an example. This is an example we used on an older episode. I'll use it again because I think it's really helpful. Let's say Isabel, who's four, wants to play with Play-Doh or like paint or like markers or something. Yeah. She wants to do something arts and crafty that has potential to be messy. Mm-hmm. We might say, yeah, I would love for you to play with the Play-Doh or the paint or whatever. We're going to put it on the table. We'll give you your paper or whatever you need for this. Mm-hmm. And we'd say the Play-Doh's like is for like being played with at the table.
Yeah.
So don't bring it over on the couches. Mm-hmm. Don't bring it upstairs. I don't want to find bits of Play-Doh all over the house.
In the carpet, yeah.
You can play with the Play-Doh, but we just ask that you keep it at the table.
Here are the boundaries of the Play-Doh.
Right.
Where the Play-Doh lives.
Yes.
In this box.
Now, does Izzy have to keep it at the table? She does not.
Nope.
And anybody with kids.
Good question. I bet he got some of you.
I think a lot of times people confuse what kids can do and what they may do because they can do whatever they want.
Yes.
Because they have the freedom. They have little brains that tell their little hands and their little feet to do what they want to do.
Yep.
And that's not always what the parent wants them to do. Mm-hmm. So there's a difference between what they can do and what they may do. So Izzy, you can leave the table with the Play-Doh, but you may not.
Right.
If you leave the table with the Play-Doh and I find it on the couch, we're just going to put it away. Mm-hmm. And so that's the boundary. And so the options we're giving her are, do you want to play with it at the table or do you want to carry it away and we'll put it away?
Yep.
It's very clear. She knows what the standards are or what the expectations are.
Yep.
And we then step back and let her make her choice. Mm-hmm. And if she wants to bring the Play-Doh into the living room, you're free to do that.
Totally fine.
I hate that for you because I'm going to put it away.
Goes back into the cabinet.
But you can try that.
Yeah.
And maybe you'll throw a tantrum if we put it away. And I'm not going to stop you because that's just you getting out whatever feelings you're feeling in that moment. And next time we'll try again. Mm-hmm. You know, we could come up with a million different examples like that.
Sure, yeah.
But that's one of the ways that we have found practically we can let our kids live in the balance of having freedom and boundaries.
Yes.
I'm not going to control you. I'm not going to tell you that you can't do something that I know you can. Mm-hmm. But I am going to tell you what you are permitted to do.
Yes.
You're not permitted to draw on the walls. Mm-hmm. You're not permitted to stand on the table. You can do that, again, because you have a little brain with little legs and you are capable of climbing on the table.
Yeah.
But if you do, I will X, Y, or, Z.
Right. Yeah. You have the plan
and so,
laid out.
Yeah. As parents, you get to get creative in establishing what your standards are.
Yeah.
And what happens when, kids use their freedom to kind of veer outside of the boundaries, which they will because they're designed to do.
Right. That's how they discover what this world is all about by testing it and seeing what works for them and what doesn't. And I feel like we mentioned this whenever we talked about it in the first episode, but I'll say it again here.
Okay.
That those types of scenarios, it's so necessary to explain what will happen if they do what you ask them not to. Mm-hmm. Because if you just say like, hey, like, sure, you can play with the Play-Doh. Great. And like in your mind, you know that if they take it away from the table, that it's going to go away. Mm-hmm. But you don't tell them that.
Right.
And they bring the Play-Doh into the living room on the carpet. And then you just freak out and take the Play-Doh away.
Right.
And put it away. Like the kid's going to be left there like, what the heck?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what I did. I didn't see this coming. And so it's just so, so, so important to just be really transparent with your kid.
Yeah.
And actually help them understand and help them succeed.
Yes.
You know, like, hey, I'm going to set you up for success in every way that I possibly can right now so that you can have a good time and I can have a good time.
Yes.
Because that's the goal for the kids and the parents, to be just loving doing life together.
Yep.
Not one or the other.
Yeah. We want you to play with the Play-Doh.
Yes.
We want you to have so much fun. Build and be creative.
Yep.
Just do it at the table.
Right.
Right.
Yep. So I don't have to be scrubbing dried Play-Doh out of my rug and trying to take it out of the cat's mouth or whatever.
Yeah. You know? Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
Never had to do those things, by the way.
Yeah.
Because the boundaries are respected.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great.
They're respected and we don't have to be super angry and controlling.
Yep.
It's amazing.
It is amazing.
Recently we had this conversation with the girls now that Oliver is scooting all around.
Yeah.
We had the conversation that in like shared spaces, so this doesn't necessarily apply to their room, but in like the living room, in our room, wherever they might play with all their little toys, I don't know what it is with kids and tiny toys,
tiny things,
but the smaller, the better.
It's just like, it's they're so little. What is it? Weenie tiny.
So
no,
that's what Izzy
weenie
calls.
Tiny, yes.
She doesn't say like teeny tiny.
Teeny tiny.
She doesn't say teeny weeny. She says weenie tiny. Weenie tiny. So she'd be like, oh, look at the weenie tiny little thing. It's amazing.
The best. Anyways, kids love small things.
So because they love small things, I don't want to find those small things anywhere where Ollie might be crawling around.
Mm-mm.
Because I don't want to have to sit there like a hawk.
Right.
And watch every one of his moves.
Yeah.
Which obviously.
Is he going near the tiny dogs?
Obviously, you and I look out for what's around.
Yes.
We're not
like
absent and passive.
Watch the baby, you 7 and 4-year-old.
Yeah. But we've explained to them, now that Ollie's crawling around, it's very dangerous if we leave little weeny tiny toys where he could find them, because everything goes in his mouth.
Yep.
And so we just very calmly explained, if we find little tiny toys, little weeny tiny toys, say it every time. If we find these little weeny tiny toys in the living room or wherever Ollie might be crawling, they're gone.
Yeah. Like in the trash.
Like most likely just like in the trash.
Yeah.
And
hidden for a long time. Yeah.
Yeah. But we went to such an extreme as a means of communicating to them, like the importance of what we're saying.
Yeah.
It's not just like, hey, we don't really want little things around where Ollie's crawling. It's like, this is extremely important because this is a matter of like keeping your brother safe.
Right. Yeah. It could actually be a matter of life and death.
Yes.
We
could be talking about life and death here.
Yeah.
So keep your little toys in your room.
Yep.
If you bring them downstairs, that's fine. Don't leave them on the floor.
Yep. They stay up on the table or up on the couch somewhere where your brother cannot access them.
And again, this is where the two different options come in. So here's the boundary. Your options are, do you want to make sure that you're cleaning up your little toys or do you want them to go away?
Yeah.
Those are your options.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously we wouldn't always go to such extremes.
Right.
Like if they leave toys somewhere that we ask them not to, it's not like we just throw everything away.
No.
But because this was such an important matter for us, we communicated to them, this is important. We're trying to keep your brother safe.
Mm-hmm.
Please help us by keeping your weeny tiny toys off the floor.
I feel like we need to somehow figure out how to name the episode Weeny Tiny Something.
We'll see. I'll workshop that a little bit.
Oh, man.
See if I can get it in.
It needs to be in there somewhere.
Maybe I'll put it in the episode description.
There we go. That's perfect.
So I feel like I've rambled for long enough.
Yeah.
But I hope that all makes sense.
Yeah.
I hope that makes sense.
It helps to put a visual on what the middle of the pendulum swing can look like.
Yes.
Is like helping your kids manage their freedom really is what we're going for.
Yes. That's
because, you know, on that one side where freedom is what reigns and chaos really is a synonym for freedom in that situation when you're dealing with young kids because kids do dumb stuff.
Yeah.
That's just how it is.
Yeah.
And it's not because they're trying to be dumb most of the time. Yeah. Sometimes it's just because they're just figuring it out. They're yeah. just saying like, I wonder what'll happen if I stack 20 pillows and then jump on top of them. You know, like,
yeah, they're trying to figure out how things work.
Figuring out. They're having fun. So, you know, kids are going to do things. It's our job as parents to help them navigate those decisions and say like, hey, that might not be the best idea. You're yeah. probably going to get hurt without being like, stop doing that, you idiot. You know, yeah. like that's yeah. when you step into the mm-hmm. authoritarian side of parenting where it's just, it's almost like getting smacked in the back of the head
yeah.
without any warning. Where you're just like, all of a sudden you're being yelled at. Mm. All of a sudden your parents being really scary. And you really like, you don't know why.
Yeah.
Because it was never explained to you to not do these things.
Right.
In like a kind and calm manner. Mm. It was just like, don't do that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you might be scared into not doing it again. Mm. But like, is that really what you're going for as a parent? To have your right. kids be scared of you and making decisions because they want to avoid having to deal with you, that doesn't sound great. Yeah.
Kids who grew up in an authoritarian paradigm typically aren't allowed to make mistakes.
Yeah.
Which is a bummer because making mistakes is like one of the best things you can do for your kids.
It's such a good way to learn.
Yeah.
I tell Nora that all the time.
Yeah.
Because she gets really frustrated mm-hmm. when she makes mistakes in like building or creating things. Yeah. And I'm like, hey, now you know how to do it next time. This is great.
Yeah.
This is such good news.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, obviously you don't want to be like, let's make so many mistakes in everything, but it's okay to like celebrate mistakes sometimes and say like, hey, you're doing a great job because mm-hmm. now next time you know what not to do.
Yep. Yeah. Kids need a safe place to learn how to fail.
Yep.
And how to make mistakes and safe place to get hurt and yes. all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think you find that right smack in the middle.
Yes.
So I think we should wrap this up.
Cool.
And I'll leave the second main point for next episode.
Oh, yes. We didn't get to that one.
We didn't even get there. So we talked about the reality that a lot of people parent for one of two reasons. Either it's because they parent the way they do because it's how they were raised, mm-hmm. or it's because it's the opposite of how they were
yeah.
raised.
Yeah. I didn't realize we didn't get there.
So the other thing that we'll talk about in the next episode, the other way that people find themselves parenting the way they do has to do with the way they view God. So if you view God as angry, as scary, as, you know, the big angry cop in the sky
mm-hmm.
who's just waiting for you to mess up,
yep.
he's looking forward to it because he just wants to punish you, tell you how horrible you are.
Yep.
Unfortunately, that is really common
yeah.
in the church.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing to me how much like the goodness and the kindness and the love of God is like a well-kept secret.
You're right. It's totally missed.
There's just so a lot often. Of people who are living with this idea that God is just angry at them. He's disappointed in them. And that will have directly affect the way you parent.
Mm.
Now, the other thing we'll have to talk about in the next episode is that this is, in our experience, like overwhelmingly true.
Mm-hmm.
That how you view God as a father, what you think about him, is generally speaking going to be the product of your relationship with your earthly father.
Mm.
The type of earthly father you had is going to influence the way you think about God.
Yes. Very much so.
And it's this interesting thing where like each part kind of affects the other, where mm-hmm. if my dad was abusive mm-hmm. and I couldn't trust him and I was scared of him, I'm going to think that about God.
Yeah.
I'll assume that God must be like my dad
mm-hmm.
and that will affect who I become as a man and it will affect
yeah.
how I parent my own kids.
Right. Yeah.
So all that fun stuff on the next episode.
Oh yeah. It's a good one.
It is a very good one.
Sometimes a hard pill to swallow.
It is, yeah.
But for all the best reasons.
Mm-hmm.
necessary.
In our experience, it has been so freeing.
Yes.
Like so much freedom has come to our lives mm-hmm. from understanding that our relationship with our earthly fathers have a significant effect on how we view God.
Yeah.
And how we view God kind of determines like everything in our life.
Right.
Everything in our life is determined by what we yes. think about God and right. what we believe he thinks about us.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll get into that in the next episode.
Yeah, that'll be good.
That's it for now.
Come back.
Yes, come back. I promise it's a great, great topic.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll go through the different father types.
Mm-hmm. That'd be good.
Yeah.
Yep. And if that sounds scary to you, that probably means you need to hear it.
if that sounds like something you don't want to do, then join us on the next episode.
Yeah.
Because it will be very good for you.
Will be nice.
Yeah. Okay. That's going to be it for this episode. Once again, my name is Brian.
And I'm Katie.
And we're making history. We'll see you next time.